everybody's coalesced behind Grand Planner. And story after story, including one over the weekend about this story was about sexting inappropriately, you know, as a married man. But this is like one of many stories about him, right? It's the Nazi tattoo. It's the weird kick account or whatever that is, that online predator app account that he has. It's the weird Port-a-John fetish that he has. It's every time you turn around, you're like, we get it. You're a stone cold weirdo. Kurt, hello. Monday. Here we are.
What's that hat you got there?
Nashville Super Speedway. I was out here I'm out in Nashville right now. Was here yesterday for the NASCAR race, which was delayed 2.5 hours because of rain. And you know what I learned?
Tis the season. What did you learn?
They have these like super jet drying cars.
Yes.
That they drive around the track to dry it when it rains so that they could, I mean, those things are loud. They sound like a jet engine. It was wild. I go back to DC tomorrow.
Oh, well, fun times in Music City.
Tomorrow is primary day. It is finally primary day. Well, it's election day in California, not necessarily primary day because, hey, Spencer Pratt gets, you know, 50% plus. He becomes the mayor of LA.
I guess he would, although I'll shave my head if that happens.
Oh, man. You know, you got to be careful with those kind of bets, buddy.
I know.
And I both know in politics, you should never make a bet where you're going to have to wear a stupid hat or eat your tie or eat your shoe. You're going to end up bald by the end of the week if you're not careful, buddy. That's the kind of thing that'll come back and get you. Let's not forget.
If Spencer Pratt wins 50+1 tomorrow, I will shave my head.
I'm telling you, listen, you've seen it before where people are like, I will eat my tie. Homeboy, just be careful. I get that it's very far-fetched, but you better be careful because that's like
how far-fetched it is. But I will do it. I'll shave my head and show up bald.
Jesus.
Well, buzz cut, not bald. I'm not going to take a dick razor to my head.
Tomorrow, and actually, in the closing day, you know, end of last week, Spencer Pratt did a New York swing and he did a bunch of the Fox shows in studio. And now he's back out in L.A. He just taped Bill Maher's podcast where they're kind of sitting down. But I've been noticing even in the reporting in the days kind of in this last stretch here, that kind of traditional GOTV 72-hour vote window ahead of election day. A lot of like their campaigning is like in people's apartments and houses and like on the street. It's very grassroots feeling. It's very, even Karen Bass, like looks like she's like, you know, more like in people's homes. It's a very, very local race that's getting a ton of national attention. Obviously it's LA. It's, you know,
an absurd level of coverage.
Yeah. But this is a national race for mayor right now. And I do think it ends up being a runoff between Karen Bass and Spencer Pratt. But, you know, I continue to think that Spencer Pratt remains the political anomaly that we just don't know how that susses out. Is there a hidden Pratt voter?
I don't think there's a hidden Pratt voter. I think that everyone who's voting for Spencer Pratt is making it very well known. And they're happy to. I mean, they are thumping their chest and going like, yeah, this is our guy. I think that I will be really curious what the numbers actually turn out to be. Again, I don't think anyone across the board to be 50+1. We're going to end up, obviously, I think, in a runoff in November.
Unless they do and someone shaves it.
I'll live to regret that, I'm sure. but I'll be curious what the actual raw vote numbers are and who turns out where and what the pro-Pratt coalition vote really looks like. If it's one thing to like, hey, I'm voting for Pratt or I'm retweeting this video and ad or whatever. It's another thing to actually show up and vote and check the box, as they say, especially in an area where most Republicans kind of feel like, what's the point? We never win anyway. I mean,
that's the thing, though, right? To have the numbers he has, and he said it before, he has to have Democrat support already, right?
I think it's one thing to say it to a pollster. It's another thing to show up and actually vote and do the thing.
That's the thing, though, right? Like, you have to know if the polling's right. Also, it is everybody knows he's a Republican, but there's no party identification on the ballot, per se.
Well, his Fox News barnstorming probably put that to bed.
But also, like, I think that there's a real opportunity here that there might be a hidden undervote that pollsters aren't catching, because this is a guy who is the Republican candidate, even if he's just running, as he says, for common sense, that says, like, I can't tell a pollster, even if I agree to tell people, out of pollsters all the time, that, like, I couldn't tell them the truth because I'm a person who lives in L.A. There's no way I'd be voting for Spencer. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I could see that instance.
Sure. I mean, again, that's why I'll be really curious to see what the final vote numbers actually look like. Is this just a performative anomaly that plays out on social media, that plays out, you know, in just conversation? Or is it a real thing that translates into the actual ballot box? Like, that's what I'm most curious to see. I don't know the answer to it. We'll find out.
I mean, I'm excited. It's the big day tomorrow. Nithya Ram is going to have a hard one, I think.
There's also the potential, like, it's been interesting watching the governor's race, because when it started, it was like, oh, what if neither Democrat makes it? What if it's 1R, 1D? It would not actually shock me if it turned out after tomorrow, it's Steyer versus Becerra, and that Hilton doesn't make it in. I could see that happening, because right now, the fight is for second place.
Yeah, it's really close in that second place. And Steyer has spent an ungodly amount of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, I believe, to try and win this race at the end here, to really push him. And it's a tale as old as time. It shows you the power of television ads still in political campaigning and in those touch points, putting that kind of money into, I mean, you would have had to have already done your mail run, like, so you can't be really dropping mail at this point. You would have had to print and do that, but you can change out traffic on TV. You can change out your ad. Mm-hmm. You can add weight to how often an ad is aired to see how many times people get it. I mean, that still shows you how much money he's spending, how important it is to persuading voters, even in these final days where people just have to, you know, drop off their ballots and vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, California, major media markets, super expensive. Yeah. It's costing him $100 million plus dollars of his own money to even try to make it to a runoff. I mean, how embarrassing would it be, honestly, to spend $100 million and not even make it to the second round, if you will?
I mean, honestly, the political consultant class on that one's like, listen, we got our points on the buy, can't help what the voters want.
They'll be dining out on Tom Steyer for a decade. Come on.
For sure. And for people's, like, knowledge base on that as well, I mean, to be fair, if you're a political consultant and you're, like, placing the ads, you're doing the things like that, you're making the strategy, yeah, of course you get paid on that. That's, like, how this industry works. So I don't want people thinking that's, like, a nefarious thing. It's also...
No. That's standard operating procedure. You do the media buy, you do the ads, you get, you know, your cut of that. That's how it works. I can't imagine spending that much money. What an ego blow it would be. Like, this is how much people don't like you. Like, even in the Democratic Party.
There are so many men who run for office after they've been wealthy and successful as this, like, I don't know, 3/4 life crisis, where it's like, I've made all this money now. Like, I've been a successful businessman, entrepreneur, whatever. And now my next thing I'm going to do is government leadership. They will spend a ton of money to try and make that their next.
It's chapter. Like when Mayor Mike ran for president, and Mayor Mike Bloomberg when he ran for president, spent stupid money, didn't even blip on the radar. And it's just like, I mean, it must be nice to have that much money that you can just literally light it on fire and not notice it or care.
You're like, what's a cool $100 million between friends? Like, no, man. There's so many of those. And Tom Steyer is but one of those men at this point, and spending a lot of money to try and have that next act. So
do you think he makes it around, or do you think Hilton has enough of the Republican support that it pushes him over?
You know, I think Hilton, I think this is going to be really tough. My gut tells me right now that Hilton's not going to make the runoff, but I could easily see a case where he does. Like, this is going.
If he doesn't, how pissed should Republicans be at Chad Bianco for not getting out and getting behind Hilton? Because that would be enough. If you consolidated the two, that'd be enough to make
it. If it ends up being that close, yeah. But also, like, these are elections, and if you're not winning the voters and persuading the voters, like, what are you gonna, like, you got to play by the rules and win by the rules, right? So, yeah, I mean, like, Chad Bianco, you know what I mean? Like, I just got to see what the numbers look like. But also, like, I is what it is, right? Like that you, that's kind of like the process where in these jungle primaries, they kind of hope that Republicans don't make the ballot because of this kind of stuff,
right,
you know? So,
right. Well, if they don't, they should know that they could have, had there been real leadership in the California Republican Party,
yeah,
and they'd gotten the guys together, like one of them would have made it. If the, you know, they can't have two of them though. It doesn't work.
Well, in either case, I could see where like Hilton makes the runoff, and I still think that he definitely can. I just think that like the money that Steyer's spending here in that home stretch with how the polls were moving, it leans Steyer, I would think, in my mind, right?
Yeah. If for some reason Spencer doesn't make it, if for some reason he doesn't, will we ever be talking about this guy ever again?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think he's made a splash. I wouldn't be shocked, like, if there doesn't become a show out of this where he becomes... I don't mean that, like, flippantly. I mean, like, he's an activist now, right? Like, there is a different side to Spencer Pratt that isn't just the guy who was the villain from The Hills. He's lost his home. He's dealing with, you know, cracked out fools on the sidewalks who take a shit everywhere, right? Like, that is the reality.
Which is why he's going to leave California. Like, if he loses, he's leaving. I think he's leaving LA.
Well, I think that was one of my favorite comments because he got asked that again. And he was like, but I'm going to win, so I'm not going anywhere. I was like, great answer. But yeah, I think that this is just a different chapter for him, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him stay relevant in some way, you know, like a Fox Nation specials series on what it's like in LA right now. You know what I mean? Like, I could see things like that for him, for sure, where he stays part of the conversation. I don't know that maybe means he runs again, but...
Right.
Yeah, all of that to say. But speaking of candidates, let's take the trip up the old East Coast to Maine.
Ooh, on the coast to coast today on Party
coast
Lines, all the way to Maine.
Here for you, like Casey Kasem back in the day, am I right?
Good old days, I remember.
So, Graham Plattner, the Dem candidate, right now, the primary is still happening. Janet Mills is still on the ballot, but, you know, everybody's coalesced behind Graham Plattner. And story after story, including one over the weekend about... This story was about sexting inappropriately, as a married man. But this is like one of many stories about him, right? It's the not get to. It's the weird kick account or whatever that is, that online predator app account that he has. It's the weird Port-a-John fetish that he has. It's every time you turn around, you're like, we get it. You're a stone cold weirdo. But yet again, he's still, I just don't get it, Kirk. What am I missing?
One, I think, and I say this with reverence, I think maniacs, they call themselves that for a reason. Like they're cut from a different cloth. That like some things they genuinely just don't give a rip about.
This seems like a lot though. It's not just one, you know what I mean? Like it's not just one thing. This is like six or seven stories, and now his wife's doing a 5-minute walking video. Right now, like, this isn't great about negative ads. Like, homegirl, like the reason people even have these text messages is because you sent them into the campaign, so like people would know about it before, ahead of time, and you made a like. I just don't get how this.
That's the classic case of you fucked up by telling the truth. It's like it happens every now and again from novices, at least. We've talked about a little bit about this before, and I think there's something to it. If something happens that seems dramatically out of character for a candidate, it has more potency. People are like, wow, that's weird. I never would have pictured that for this person. I think that when something happens that is like more like, oh, I could see that, it just doesn't land the same. And we see it on both parties. I think Donald Trump gets away with a lot of things that traditional politicians wouldn't be able to because it wouldn't align. You couldn't see John Thune having a fling with a porn star. Like, no, like that would just be so out of like, what?
Yeah, no, but, that was a very extreme example. But
it's a super extreme thing. But with Donald Trump, someone who worked in Hollywood, who worked in the entertainment industry, who's a celebrity, it's like you go like, yeah, okay, like you commingle with a lot of interesting people when you're in that world, in that rarefied air. Conversely, I think when you look at the, you know, tattoo laden blue collar Graham Plattner, you're like,
that's a lie though too. The guy grew up.
I'm saying the image. I'm just saying the image of him. When you look at him, like there's, he's like right out of casting in that way. You're like, yeah, yeah, I could see this guy sexting some girls. Like, I could see it. It's like, it's, he's not coming, he's not casting himself as this polished, you know, wearing a sweater vest Glenn Youngkin type person, right? He's that, that's not him at all. And so I think some voters look at this and they just shrug their shoulder, like, well, I mean, his wife's still with him, so that helps in that case.
How humiliating, though. It happened before.
I can have a moral conversation about all of this on some level, but it's like right now, it's like for the moment, this isn't something that's happening as a candidate that we know of. This isn't something that's happened in the last
that
6 months or a year.
That quick account thing that he has, though, that Predator app, he's still on that right now. That account is still active. Like, there, I get your point that, like, and I think that's really smart analysis as well, that, like, it's not, no one would be shocked looking at that guy to think he would be doing some, you know, creepy kind of things like that.
Sure.
I get your point, but the bigger issue is he's still doing this. And for all of the lambasting the left does of the right, and I know there's a tit for tat, everybody does this, but the left, like, freaks out and tries to scream about moral superiority so often to Republicans. And you have this guy who, God, I've never seen an oppo dump like this. And it seems like the, you know, the hits keep coming on him, and Democrats aren't out here saying, like, that guy should not represent the party. The best you're getting is Cory Booker right now, who on the Sunday shows gave a tepid, he has questions to answer, and that's what campaigns are for. At what point does that, like, moral superiority argument of Democrats start showing up at the, like, showing up in elections? Because this guy, like, they can, well, it takes oxygen out of any moral superiority argument they're going to try to make against any other Republican candidate that isn't perfect across the country. Is this
I think there are a couple ways to look at it. I think Democrats would tell you, it's like, well, we're not the party that's legislating family values and then having affairs and fucking around. Like, I think it's the hypocrisy that I think Republicans get to, like, you know, again, I'm say Ken Paxton, when you have those issues and you're out there also promoting a very family friendly, family oriented agenda, something doesn't align there. Democrats are not the party that's saying the nuclear family is the way to go. I wish things were more like the 1960s, if you will. So that stuff doesn't cling to them the same way when it comes to this specific sexting thing. I think that, again, I think I have to believe, and I think this is true almost universally when it comes to men, there's more there. There's more there that will come out.
Yeah.
People like this do not stop that behavior, in my opinion.
Anthony Weiner, remember that?
Like, oh God, yeah.
He was doing it like years later as well. And they're like, you're still doing this?
It's like, just because you get caught, that doesn't mean you stop. I think
and
that
I gotta
people
tell
like
you,
that.
We've said it before. I think we said it on the first episode of the pod. No one wants a nude from a dude.
Agreed.
No one wants to see
no
it.
One.
Ever. And tie this in, Summer House Reunion for Bravo TV just aired the first episode this last week. And in it, one of the guys was like, my phone got hacked and people got my nudes. And it's like, no, you sent someone that picture of your junk and they sent it to other people. No one wants your nudes. And
nobody wants them.
Like, this guy, the sexting, all that other stuff. Like, we are, I think, a breath away from this.
Yeah, I will not be shocked if and when there's more. And I think that, you know, the political figures that are campaigning with this person, it's like, you think you would kind of learn the lesson, frankly, that so many Democrats just experienced with Eric Swalwell, right? Like, a lot of Democrats were behind Eric and then it goes south. And like, if you're out there right now about to hit the campaign trail with Graham Plattner, just know, like, there's another shoe that's going to drop.
Like, and are you going to be standing next to him when the next story pops? Yeah.
And you can't say now at this moment, like, oh, I never would have thought that would have happened. You can't claim ignorance there. That bubble just got burst.
Yeah, I totally agree. And listen, like, Bernie's out there with him, you know, like, you have national figure Democrats who are campaigning with Graham Plattner right now. And
now this could also be, I'm sorry to interrupt, there's also going to be, just stepping a little bit back, just a broader cultural moment here for both parties where voters just don't give a shit about this stuff. They just don't care.
I think that's a fair point. The same thing, you know, with the Paxton race down in Texas, right? People talk about, you know, everything that's come out against Ken Paxton over all of those years, right? But people, I think, are a little like, we know this. Yeah. We know this. It doesn't, because that's the thing. If there was anything else on Ken Paxton, I think that if John Cornyn's team had it, they would have put it out there. They would have done another ad series. They would have gone and used that other new negative against him.
Right.
Kind of, he's won 3 statewide cycles with the information out there. I take your point that, like, it, you know, in some of these instances, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, it's baked in and people aren't shocked. But I agree, like, across the board, we like Joe Morelli.
Our good buddy Joe Morelli.
Bringing it back to old Joe. He won his first election based on voter fraud, based on submitting fraudulent signatures to get ballot access, and has been an elected official ever since.
Yes.
Ever since. And he treats staff terribly. His staff terribly. So not only is he an election fraudster, but look, Rochester, it's a solid blue area. There's not really a Republican in that area that can run to try and beat Joe Morelli. And they certainly aren't putting anybody else up. Although there are some Democrats, even like at the town level in Rochester now, that are trying to like oust some of the older folks. But no one's coming. No, he should. Somebody should go after him. He is a failed member of Congress. You can just show that by the numbers of what's happening in Western New York and in Rochester. But again, like, you would think we could find better people. And this is the scary part about candidates like this, right? These are usually the best and brightest that come to DC are usually like the best and brightest that come out of the state capitals. And it worries me a little of who gets left behind.
Yes, I do. The quality control or lack thereof across the board is incredibly concerning to me at this point. In our elected offices,
because it is such a tough business.
Because it sucks. Because it's like that's why I question a lot of these rich people. I'm like, why do you want to do this? Like, this is a horrible quality of life decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, go take your money, have a good time. Don't do this.
I could tell you if the Kurt and Aaron podcast became a multi-billion-dollar franchise, you'd never see us again after we.
You know what would be happening, guys? Not running for office. That's for sure. Definitely.
We would turn this into a travel influencer podcast as we gallivant around the world.
Look at me in the Maldives.
Exactly.
No, and you know this, Kurt, if you work in politics at all and you're somewhat competent and you like go out and, you know, you're pitching people in the state or you go to these kind of state party conventions or these county party things and they're like, are you going to run? No.
Oh, God. The amount of times we've been asked that, it's like, oh, you'd be great. It's like, no.
Absolutely not.
There's only one scenario that would ever serve an elected office. And it's if someone died and I was appointed and I would never have to run again.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, that's a
good
one, right?
I would take an appointment.
Yeah, an appointment for sure. Yeah.
But I wouldn't run. I would make it very clear. I'm not running for reelection. I'll take the appointment.
It's like, right, isn't that like there's a senator right now, was that in Oklahoma? The governor was
right.
Yeah, you have to agree to like not run again. And so the guy's like, yeah, sure, I'll take it.
Yep.
Pretty sure that's what happened.
Yeah, I would do that. I'd take a flyer on it, fill out the rest of the term, like just to check the box, have a little fun. I would make it my personal mission to be censured more than any member in history for cursing and obscenities on the House floor. I would do that constantly and at committee hearings.
Wow. It sounds like you're being very productive.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be hilarious. And then I go on a reality TV show afterwards and be set.
See, there you go. Making that money. All right, friend.
That's it.
Anything else?
That's it. We'll see. I'll be very curious to see what our conversation's like on Thursday after the primaries.
Woohoo! Thursday.
It's coming.
And we've got more primaries ahead to look forward to. There are
New York, Michigan.
Michigan's a big one coming up.
Big one.
So, yeah.
Lots to keep up with. All right, party animals.
Party on, party animals.